The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January only costs $7.99. It's titled, Five Things You Can Do to Witness Christ. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Five Things You Can Do to Witness Christ by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, equipping you to witness Christ on the front lines. Five Things You Can Do to Witness Christ. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This has been a story running in the news for quite some time. There's a lot of mystery surrounding it because we've been unsure as to what was the initial problem, who this young girl in California is. And the story, as far as I can tell, has been one of kind of common heartbreak on the part of this girl's family. And very, very unexpected tragic surgical outcome. The girl is declared brain dead. We'll have to find out what that means. And then the family had to fight for the child to have respiration and a feeding tube. Wesley Smith joins us to bring us an update on this story. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Forced Exit, Euthanasia, Assisted Suicide, and The New Duty to Die, and Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. And he authors a column for National Review Online called Human Exceptionalism. Wesley, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd, and pardon my voice, but I've just learned about viral exceptionalism.
Some have tried to tie together this recent story with one that ran for, golly, almost a decade. We talked with you so many times, the story of Terry Schindler's Shivo. Is this Terry Schivo Redux?
No, not at all. Terry Schivo was a living patient who was dehydrated to death based on basically the quality of her life. Poor Jahi McMath is a deceased person and has been declared dead by what's called neurological criteria. The term brain death is a kind of a popular term. It's almost a misnomer. What is actually described is death by neurological criteria, where after a series of tests both mechanical and like reflex tests and so forth, at least three different doctors have found that she has absolutely no brain function, either in the whole brain or in any of its parts. And that is legal death in all 50 states, including California. The other method of declaring death is irreversible, it's sometimes called heart death, irreversible cessation of cardiopulmonary function. So we have two ways of declaring death in this country, which came about because of life support and so forth. But under the law, poor Jahi has passed away. And, of course, her family didn't accept that. But this isn't Terry Schivo.
Now, I wonder whether part of the confusion or the confusion with the Schivo case actually comes from more of a misunderstanding of Terry Schivo's condition than of this 13-year-old girl in California.
I think that's a very good point. You know, a lot of people still to this day say that Terry Schivo was brain dead, by which they mean it as a kind of a put down of her and a denigration. Terry Schivo could breathe on her own, for example. By definition, that meant she wasn't brain dead, which by definition meant she wasn't dead. The term brain dead in Jahi's situation is not a denigration. It's a description, the Schivo case really had to do with the moral value in many ways of a living patient. This case has to do for people who are objecting to Jahi being declared dead, whether or not brain death is legitimate in terms of declaring death. That's what the controversy is here. In Terry Schivo's case, they made her dead by taking away her food and water. In this case, Jahi died because of the very unfortunate consequences of surgery. So there are huge distinctions here, but it's easy to blur them sometimes, particularly since those who really despise, frankly, Terry Schivo's family for trying to save her will often use the brain death term but it is completely inaccurate in her case.
So Terri Schiavo could breathe on her own.
She
was able, if given a feeding tube, she was able to digest food, all those kinds of things. It was simply an inability to feed herself.
Yeah, she was cognitively devastated, either in a persistent vegetative state, meaning unconscious, although those we now know are mistaken at least 40% of the time, or what is known as a minimally conscious state, which is what I think she was from talking to people who were in the room with her. To me, it doesn't matter. She was a living human being, which meant she was entitled to equal moral worth. In this situation, the body of a brain-dead person can be maintained for a period of time, including it will process nutrients, but eventually it will break down because there is absolutely no brain function of any kind. That isn't to say there aren't living brain cells, although it's possible there aren't in her case because she had a terrible brain bleed and was without, and according to from what I've read, and again, I'm just an observer here, but from what I've read, there's no circulation in her brain. There's no way that if she was accurately diagnosed, and that's of course an issue with brain death, that she can ever come back. If they took away the ventilator, she wouldn't even be able to gasp for air because there would be no stimuli from the brain to the diaphragm to contract and expand, which is how we breathe. That's not true of somebody in a persistent vegetative state. Sometimes they need a ventilator to survive, but they do have that breathing impetus. It may not be effective, but they also have reflex and brain function and so forth.
Okay, I got a couple final questions here, Wesley. One is, from a truly ethical standpoint, I hate to put it in your lap, but how would you advise the family and the medical authorities here to proceed?
Well, the case is basically done. What has happened has happened. I'm very impressed with the judge in this case, Judge Grillo of the Alameda County Superior Court. I thought this was kind of one of those you cannot reach an agreement accommodation because the hospital is insisting, and this is, by the way, happening in my neck of the woods. I live near Oakland. The hospital is insisting we will not treat Jahai as if she were a living patient. The parents were insisting you cannot take off the ventilator because we think she's still alive. And what happened was the court was able to fashion a settlement wherein the hospital kept the Jahai on a ventilator, which California law provides, by the way, after brain death, families are given a reasonable time under the law to accommodate themselves. So that was consistent with the law. The hospital then turned over Jahai to the coroner. So they, as far as they were concerned, they treated the Jahai as if she were deceased. The coroner then gave the body to the parents, still hooked up to the ventilator. The parents then took took Jahai elsewhere and have now stated they've put in a feeding tube and so forth. As I said earlier, if Jahai is truly brain dead, except in the most extraordinarily rare cases, her body will deteriorate regardless of the support that it is given mechanically and medically and so forth. And so we'll see what happens. If Jahai's body is able to actually improve and so forth, that would be very eyebrow-raising in terms of the long-term circumstance. So, but the case is over. The parents have Jahai. They are trying to keep her maintained. This is probably almost surely going to be on their dime. In fact, people are helping pay for this through charitable giving. We all can have great empathy for them and for their effort. But the dispute is over. It's settled. It's now just a matter of what will happen in terms of the future for Jahai, in terms of the support, how long it will last, and when her body will begin to deteriorate regardless of support. But if that doesn't happen, then it'll be very interesting.
One last question with about a minute. Why, in terms of really understanding the ethical issues at play in end of life, the broad bracket of the end of life, is it vitally important that we be able to distinguish between the Terri Schiavos and this 13-year-old California girl?
Well, because, you know, once a person has died, our obligation to that person is not the same as if a person is alive. All living people should have equal moral worth. And one of the things I resented and fought as hard as I could against in the Terri Schiavo case were people saying, well, she doesn't matter anymore because of her brain condition. We must fight against that because that is a denigration. That is invidious discrimination. But the way we treat a deceased person, they no longer have, for example, the right to life, you might say. And, of course, we owe due respect to the body of a deceased person, but they're not, they don't have rights in the sense that a living person does. And of course, there are people in this case. Dr. Paul Byrne is a notable example. In fact, he's taken after me in print on this, who thinks that brain death isn't accurate. But I do, and I thought a lot long and hard about this. And so people will have to decide this issue for themselves in that sense. But there is a night and day difference between how we treat living people and our obligation to people who have died.
Wesley Smith is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Forced Exit, Euthanasia, Assisted Suicide, and The New Duty to Die. Also, Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. He's author of a column for National Review Online called Human Exceptionalism. You can read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, thanks for being our guest.
Good talking to you. I'm sorry I was under such sad circumstances.
Me too. Pastor Larry Bean joins us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about the impact of the war on poverty, now 50 years old, on the church's mercy work. Stay tuned.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Thankful for God's service through the pastors in your life? Then consider attending Christ for Us in the Office of the Holy Ministry, a conference of the Association of Confessing Evangelical Lutheran Congregations, this coming February 25th through 27th in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Visit our website at acelc.net for information on Christ for Us in the Office of the Ministry. Register online at acelc.net.
It's here, it's here, it's finally here. Lutheran Catechesis Catechist Edition, a comprehensive guide to catechesis for a Lutheran congregation, including expanded helps on the catechism, a section of catechesis on the table of duties, Christian vocation, and learn-by-heart schedules for the congregation at prayer. Order yours today from the Concordia Catechetical Academy at peacesussex.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes. Dedicated customer service and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen on Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org and click Listen on Demand.